charismatic, passionate, has integrity, humble, servant, inspiring, faithful, persevering, positive, flexible, driven.
This is not about theory. This is about application. This is what you're trying to be. This is who we are that call ourselves leaders.
I'm Dave Ramsey, and you're listening to the Entree Leadership Podcast.
Hey guys, it's Christy Wright, and welcome to today's podcast. I'm excited to be back with you today. We are actually talking about a topic that I love to learn about because I'm not great at it, and that topic is productivity. We are going to actually interview David Allen, who is the best-selling author of the book Getting Things Done. You may have heard of him. He's been an expert in this field for over a decade, has over a million Twitter followers, and really has made a change in the marketplace and productivity one business at a time. So let's check it out. David, we're so thankful to have you on this call. We're big fans, like I said, here in this company, but your book has made such an impact. And we're talking today about Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. And it's an international bestseller for over a decade. It's been translated into 28 languages. And I know you have over a million Twitter followers. So this method is making such an impact. And so, you know, there's many of us that like to get things done. And I know myself, for example, but a lot of times we kind of forget how we get things done. And that's what this book is about, right?
It really is. You know, over the years, I just looked at what works when things work for us and just sort of unpacked what's the principle at play there.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you make that principle explicit instead of implicit, you can do it a lot better and a lot easier.
Well, tell me a little bit about that. What do you mean by making it explicit?
Well, most everybody listening to this podcast, if not everybody, at some point has felt overwhelmed and confused and sat down and made a list.
Sure.
And felt at least a little bit more in control and a little bit more focused.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you reverse engineered that and figured out how come that happened, nothing changed in your world except how you are engaged with your world.
Mm.
And you felt better.
Mm.
And by the way, in the last 35 years that I've been working with this material, I have never had anybody do what the scientists now call distributed cognition, i.e. get it out of your head.
Mm.
It didn't give you more of a sense of clarity, more of a sense of focus, more of a sense of control. And so I just figured out that principle called, hey, that works all the time, so don't keep anything in your head.
Yeah.
Which I don't.
Exactly.
But most people keep their world in their head.
Mm.
And they're still using their psyche as their system, and it doesn't work.
Mm.
You understand the principle, you wouldn't keep anything in your head the rest of your life.
And you really talk about that in the first chapter. You kind of lay out the two main objectives in that first chapter of you want to capture everything you need to get done. And the way that you put it is to get it out of your head and off your mind. And then you want to make decisions about what you capture in order to plan what to do next. So talk me through a little bit about those two things.
Well, let me be a little radical here. Basically,
okay.
Getting things done is not about getting things done. It's really about being appropriately engaged with everything in your life and work.
Mm, okay.
It's really about appropriate engagement. I mean, come on. Chris, you and I right now, how many things are we not doing while we're talking to each other?
A lot.
A lot. A ton of things, right? So the only way that you're going to be present and be fully available to whatever it is you're putting your focus on, whether that's playing with your dog, watching your daughter play soccer, writing a business plan, trying to negotiate a deal, you know, that's the optimal way to be, is to be present. So
sure.
You're not distracted and your attention's not held hijacked by other things.
Sure.
So in order to be present, though, here, you need to have fairly recently looked across everything else and say, nope, they'll all wait. This is what I need to be doing now. But you need to know what you're not doing in order to feel comfortable with what you're not doing.
Oh, that's good.
And most people, what you mentioned and what I go over in the book, is how do you define the work that you're not doing? Obviously, you know, when you define it appropriately, you will wind up getting a lot more done.
Sure.
Because the truth is that once you make these decisions about what exactly your work is, and that's there's more to that than meets the eye. Work is not self-evident these days. You know, you have to actually sit down and say, wait a minute, what does this email mean? What am I going to do something with this? What's the next action I need to take? And by the way, does this now represent some project that I'm committed to finish or complete? And that kind of executive decision-making is what people have to make hundreds of times a day, because that's how much input is coming in. So you have to think about those kinds of things. But without those questions being answered, you are still inappropriately engaged with your stuff, and it will own you instead of you owning it.
You know, that's such a good point. I did a session at our Entree Leadership Master Series where I talked to people about life balance, and I give this example of being on a date with my husband where when I was on the way to the restroom, I check my phone and I check an email, and immediately my attention was gone from the date, and I was thinking about work and what I need to do and how I need to fix the problem and who I needed to get involved. And when I came back to the table and my husband asked me, you know, what was wrong, because my whole posture changed and I started telling him about it, the way I described it to our audience was that became work. It was no longer a date because we're talking about work and we're thinking about work, and that's where my attention was. So that's such a great point. I've experienced that for sure in my own life. And I think that, you know, many times when we talk about productivity, we think about how we can do more. But to most of these business leaders, that just sounds exhausting, you know, because you're thinking about, oh, I don't have an inch of room in my schedule to do more. But what you're talking about is actually having more energy and being more relaxed, right?
Well, you don't need time. You need space.
Mm.
I mean, how much time does it take to have a good idea?
Yeah, like seconds.
Zero. It does not take time to have a good idea. Mm-hmm. How much time does it take to be strategic? Zero.
Mm.
What you don't need is time. What you need is psychic room.
Mm.
You need room inside your head. So if you have room inside your head, you, with 3 seconds with your husband or with somebody in an elevator, you can have a fabulous idea and deepen a relationship.
Right.
If you don't have psychic room in your head, you know, you will waste 2 hours playing solitaire because you're just avoiding your life.
Right.
So it really is about room. And most executives and entrepreneurs and business leaders that I work with, that's what they need. Mm-hmm. That they would give anything to be able to have more space in their head for doing creative thinking, being innovative, being strategic, everything that their boss or their shareholders or their board really is tasking them to do.
Sure. That's really interesting, too, because I think that, like you said about these entrepreneurs, I think there's a certain wiring in people that are kind of wired to be entrepreneurs and leaders. And one of the things I've realized in my own life, because I kind of had that in my DNA and in my family and how I was raised even, but we kind of exist in this chaos, in this, you know, this mode of being stressed, and we just accept that as our normal. And so I've got sticky notes covering my desk, or I've got, you know, an inbox that's just, you know, days and days behind on and things like that. But I think it's interesting. What do you really say to people, leaders and entrepreneurs that are stressed and they don't even consider that there's a different way? They just, that's what they've accepted as their normal.
Well, I'll tell them, hey, there's a different way. And not only that if you want this to be sustainable in this century, this is a whole new set of behaviors that have to be applied.
Mm-hmm.
Because that what you're talking about and what you're describing is not sustainable.
Mm, yeah,
it really isn't. That, you know, it's a formula for burnout.
Right.
Now, if you're still plenty young and got a bunch of adrenaline running in you, who cares? You
know, right.
Well, you're a 24/7 kind of person anyway.
Right.
But as soon as you have kids and want to play a little golf and want to take a watercolor class, I'm sorry, you now are running up against something that's probably not exactly going to be the healthiest kind of lifestyle for you.
Right.
And, you know, these days, what's, you know, as I mentioned, space is what's critical, but you also need to utilize that space with reflection.
Mm.
And if you don't get reflection time, and if you don't, you know, sort of handle all that lower level stuff that's grabbing your attention, it's very difficult to then utilize the reflection and review and executive back off and let me think about my world and my life, which you've got to do at least a couple of hours a week.
Mm.
And most people are not doing that. It's the behavior that's probably most lacking and most needed in order to have a kind of sustainable focus out there through
right.
what you're doing.
And you talk about this in your book, and that's because we have so many things on our mind. And you actually, I think, kind of go through the psychology of why things are on our mind. Can you explain that for our listeners?
Well, you know, as soon as you make a commitment, and most people have no idea how many things they've actually committed to, but if you started to catalog all of your woulds, coulds, shoulds, need to, might want to, ought to, you know, whatever.
There's a lot.
It's a huge. It takes most people 1 to 6 hours just to capture that.
Mm.
Not to even decide anything or do anything about it, but just to identify what it is that's yanking your chain.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're using your psyche to remember or remind,
mm-hmm.
that part of you that's, you know, it runs 24/7 and it thinks you should be doing all that all the time.
Mm.
In other words, your head is for having ideas, but not for holding them.
Okay.
And since my book was written over a decade ago, the last decade has seen an incredible amount of data that's come now from the cognitive scientists that basically is validating, you know, what Getting Things Done wrote about just from my street smarts. It's like your head truly is not designed for keeping track of any of that stuff. And it, as a matter of fact, as soon as you're trying to remember and remind something in your head, it denigrates performance. They've been able to prove that.
Wow.
Because you're adding cognitive load, fancy word to say you're just stressing yourself out by keeping it in your head. If you want to maximize performance, and that means how sharply you're thinking, how much you're accessing your intuition, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of making good judgment calls about things, then an empty head is exactly where you want to be. That's the best place to hit a golf ball from or fire somebody from.
Hmm.
You know, because you just need to be fully there. That's all. And I just found out how you get there. You know, and it's not something to believe. It's not even something to be passionate or motivated about. It's just data.
Right. It's just the facts.
Your brain doesn't work. You know, I'm not a motivational speaker. I think passion is highly overrated. You know, quite frankly, it's just start to do some things based upon how your psyche actually functions,
mm-hmm.
and then you'll test it out. Now, it turns out that people get motivated and highly passionate about my stuff because it really works.
Sure.
Yeah, but I understand what people are up against because I've spent literally thousands of hours with some of the best, brightest, and busiest people on the planet actually walking them through this process, and they pay me big bucks to do that.
Sure, because it works.
Yeah, it works, absolutely. But it is nice to have some sort of a reference point for that because there's getting organized and there's getting organized. It's mm-hmm. really not about getting organized. It's one component.
Sure.
Some people need to be disorganized. They need to undo their systems and structures because they're ineffective.
Mm. So talk about that a little bit. That's interesting to me. So some people's kind of their regular systems are not working for them, you're saying.
Yeah, if they still have any stuff in their head, a lot of people have set up systems that takes too much thinking to use the systems.
Mm.
The systems aren't complete.
Okay.
You know, some people, especially people buy, you know, fancy new cool software that's going to get them organized.
Right.
And as long as their inner geek shows up on a rainy Saturday, they're cool.
Right.
But when they deal with the fire hose of life that's going to splat them in the face on Monday morning, that stuff won't stick.
Right.
And your system is only as good as what you will keep current, complete, and consistent when you feel like crap. Because that's as good as it'll be. Because as soon as you fall off the wagon, then your brain starts to take back what you're doing.
Mm.
So that's the only criterion. It's called, look, is your head clear? Is there anything popping into your mind more than once? There's no need for it.
And that's a very specific definition you have there of being able to implement that system for one that works. That's good.
Yeah, well, you know, come on. If you sat down with me and say, David, what should I do with this? I say, what do you need to do with that to get it off your mind?
Mm.
That's all. That's the only sole criterion. I'm not selling gear. I'm not selling anything except the thought process.
Right. And one of the things you talk about in your book is the idea of vertical focus. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, you can think the vertical focus is being aware of all the different horizons that we have commitments.
Mm.
And not only do you have commitments like I need cat food and I got to take the kids to the soccer game and I need to buy rubber bands and I need to get bread. You know, we got all those kinds of commitments, but those things operate at what I call the ground level. And
mm-hmm.
then you have five other levels or what I call horizons of your commitments. The reason you do a lot of actions, which is the sort of bottom level, that's where the rubber hits the road, is because you have a lot of projects. That's the next level up.
Mm-hmm.
So what's a project? That's something that I need to accomplish. It's going to take more than one step to get there.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of buy cat food, I need to get a cat, or I need to hire an assistant, or mm-hmm. I need to launch the ad campaign. That's the next horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, most people have between 30 and 100 of those kinds of commitments, projects.
Wow.
You include all the personal as well as your professional ones. But the reason you have projects is the next horizon up is because you have areas of focus and accountability and responsibility. You know, your job, you're responsible for asset management or public relations or sales or operations or admin. Those things you don't finish. Those things you just need to maintain at certain levels and certain standards. And that's what drives a lot of your projects. You have a project to go increase your bank's, your credit line at the bank because you're responsible for finances and asset management of your company.
Mm-hmm.
And in your personal life, you've got all those levels of commitments, too. You've got your health and vitality. You have relationships. You have your household. You have your creative expression. You have your career. So, you know, I don't mean to be overwhelming everybody, but don't shoot the messenger. These are
right.
These are
no, it's just the facts, like you said.
So we're going vertically up here.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason that you actually have all of those is because you probably have some sort of vision and goals in your life in terms of lifestyle and career, the places you're going.
Mm-hmm.
So the next horizon up would be, what are you trying to accomplish over the next 3 to 24 months?
Mm.
That's typically where most people's strategic plans or operational plans are in their companies. But that'd be a next level of commitment called what are you committed to finish or accomplish or achieve, you know, by the end of 2014 or 2015.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason you have those is because there's another horizon up there, which I call vision. It's a long-term picture. You know, where are you going to be when you grow up? What is your company when it grows up? 5 years from now, what would a Sunday afternoon feel like?
Sure.
You know, that. So there's another level. Everybody, the life you're living at some point was a long-term vision.
Right.
Right. So that's another level. And then there's even one above that called, why are you on the planet? How are you doing? What's your purpose as a human being?
Sure.
And what are your core values? What's really, really, really important to you? You don't care where you live or where you work or who you marry as long as what.
Right.
And that's where you're going to hear those levels of commitment. And these are not, you know, these are not frou-frou, na-na-nu-nu things. These are very real.
Right.
In terms of what drives us. So that's the vertical thinking. And you can apply those horizons on a company. What's the purpose of the company and its core values? What's its long-term picture? What would wild success look like? You know, what are the things it needs to accomplish shorter terms? What does the org chart look like in terms of areas of accountability mm-hmm. people have so that the engine works? And then what are all the projects people have to finish about any and all of that? And then what are all the actions people need to take?
Sure.
So I couldn't get it any simpler than that. Those are very different conversations and very different content. Ideally, they're all lined up.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't do one and ignore the others.
Well, it's interesting, too, because just everything you're saying is so, I can say it definitely rings true in my own life, but even what I've seen when I've coached people, because there's such a, when there's a disconnect between the way you describe at the top level and the bottom level, there's this frustration when your tasks or your projects don't reflect or are not in line with, as you said, your vision, your goals, your purpose. There's this real frustration and tension that people experience and they can't identify it. But as you're saying, all these things are going on in your life at any given time.
Sure. And it's not, you know, it's like, I'm not a big fan of ABC priorities or even high, medium, and low. I mean, I have two priorities, talking to you and everything else. What am I going to do when I stop talking to you? Beats me.
Right.
You know, I love being spontaneous, following my spontaneous intuitive hunches about what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Don't fence me in. Now, that's
sure.
my particular style.
Sure.
You know, a lot of people like to have their life more structured than I do. But I didn't, you know, I'm not a naturally organized guy. People think of my stuff as being highly organized. It's not really.
Mm.
I mean, it's probably relative to a lot of other things it might be, but that's not the key. But see, you know, if you decide to take a nap at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, which, by the way, they've discovered is a lot better than a cup of coffee, right, in terms of you keeping your energy up for the rest of the day,
mm-hmm.
better off to take a 22-minute nap
mm-hmm.
right about 1:30 or 2 o'clock. And so, you know, when is that a priority?
Mm.
I mean, if you want to see how many priorities you have, think about how many things you do today.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you decide to go eat lunch, you've made that a priority above anything else. You decide to go to sleep, you decide taking care of your body is more important than your marriage or your job because you just went unconscious to all of that.
Right. That's a good way to put it when you put it that way.
No, it's true.
Sure.
And so, you know, trying to oversimplify, okay, I need to make sure everything is lined up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a big challenge. But the main thing you're going to have to do, if somebody says, David, how do I set priorities? I'm going to say, okay, let's get everything out of your head, everything. Mm. And let's take a look at the maps that you need to be looking at. And a map would be, what's the orientation tool? If you look at a calendar this morning to know where you needed to be when, you're looking at a map. You're
mm-hmm.
looking at something that orients you.
Sure.
So what we would do, and what I'd often do with executives and business owners and entrepreneurs, what's the map they need to be looking at?
Mm.
And that's going to be a lot about their organization, a lot about all these things I just talked about. What are these things, you know, that are important to you? And just get it all out of your head. Because I've discovered most everybody knows what to do
mm-hmm.
once they get it out. Once they unload and once you get a clear head, that's the whole point. It makes it a whole lot easier to see the whole gestalt or the whole game and then make good judgment calls. It doesn't get rid of your challenges. Heavens no.
Right.
You know, but, you know, when you run into stormy seas, you just want to make sure you got your hand on the helm.
Right, absolutely. And it's like you said, it's not that it's a, you know, a quick fix. It's just it's you're becoming more productive and less stressed in the process.
Yeah, well, you know, believe it or not, most people get most inspired and move into their zone when they step into a challenge. You know, if you've read any, you know, Csikszentmihalyi's work on flow, you know, that's a lot of how you get there.
Mm.
If you didn't have challenge, you'd be bored stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's no fun. So you still want to be involved in the game.
Sure.
You just want to make sure, again, that you're in the driver's seat and not being battered around as a victim of it.
Right. That's a great point. That's a great way to put it. And like you said a few minutes ago, just simply being present. I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, some of the people that I coach on life balance and talking about their family outside of the work. Like, what a gift, you know, for someone to give their spouse is just to be fully present, not checking emails at the table, not sure. thinking about 18 other things, but really be present, listening to their story, engaging with their children. Like, that is so rare these days. And so just for you to offer some tools and techniques for you to be fully present is a huge gift, you know, in many areas of someone's life.
You know, and Chris, that's really true. And it's one thing to say that. It's another thing to actually do what you
right.
need to do.
Right.
To actually make that happen, because it won't happen by itself. You can't just go, oh, I now affirm I'm going to be present. Good
right.
luck. And, you know, you're going to be going to the bathroom and thinking about your business instead of your husband.
Right, exactly.
That's what you're doing then. But the whole idea is to be able to walk away from everything and say, that's okay where it is right now. But what you reflected with that kind of behavior, self-disclosing as it was, is what most people are living in is emergency scan modality.
Yes.
Because they never clean up their backlog. They have a huge backlog of potentially meaningful stuff sitting in their email, sitting in their desk, sitting in their head, and therefore they're never feeling like they're at any kind of a ground zero.
Right.
They're always checking, always checking, always checking, always
right.
checking. I can't miss anything, can't miss
right.
anything. And then they keep looking at it and don't do anything with it.
Right. No, that's such a good point.
It's like, well, come on.
Well, and that's what we see, too. Even with our entree leaders, it's like they live their life just putting out fires. Everything is urgent. It's just one thing after the next. And to your point, it's a backlog. It's this emergency operation mode all the time. And I know you talk in the book about a natural planning model that's kind of built into our brains. Describe that just for a minute to our listeners.
Sure. Well, years ago, I asked myself, well, wait a minute, what... all these different models about planning. There's got to be some truth about how we actually plan. And then I realized, hey, we all know the most brilliant planner in the world. It's our head.
Mm-hmm.
You're planning all the time. So just simply like going out to dinner, you have an intention or a purpose. Then you have a vision of what it would look like. You know, when we're out to dinner,
mm-hmm.
a vision of success. And then you start to say, "Ooh, wait a minute, that doesn't match my current picture." So now that generates brainstormed ideas. Well, what time should we go, and what's the weather like, and how are we dressed, and do we want to invite guests? So then you're brainstorming.
Mm-hmm.
And then at a certain point, you go, well, wait a minute, let's line this up. Let's call the restaurant first, and then let's call the Smiths, and see, and then let's get dressed, et cetera. So in other words, you start to organize. And then at some point, you say, okay, well, I need to call the restaurant, pick up the phone. Well, what I just did was the five phases of how we naturally do everything. There's purpose, then a vision, then brainstorming, then organize, and then action. And that's actually how you walk, how you get dressed, how you talk. You're actually doing that all the time. But though that's the natural model, was that the way your wedding was planned?
Mm.
Is that the way your vacation was planned?
Mm.
Is that the way you're planning software? Are you asking yourself, wait a minute, what's our real purpose here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what's really important about this? And what would wild success, you know, for the wedding really look, sound, or feel like in all of its wonderful detail? And
mm-hmm.
oh, by the way, now let's think of all the potentially relevant stuff that we might need to consider about all this. So we don't miss anything. And then, okay, let's get organized. Okay, next actions. So the natural model is not the normal model.
And you talk about that idea of next actions, which I think is really interesting, because as you go through the book, you're saying most to-do lists are a list of things, not actions, right?
Yeah, 99% of every to-do list I've ever seen when I sat down to work with somebody is nothing but an incomplete list of still unclear stuff.
Mm.
By the way, every single thing on any one of your lists is either attracting or repulsing you psychologically every time you look at it.
Mm.
Either, you're either going, when can I mark that off? Or, get out of my face.
Let's avoid it.
That still requires thinking and decision-making that I haven't done yet, and I don't have the energy to think and decide, so stop reminding me I'm overwhelmed.
Mm.
So most people's real experience with looking at their own organization is fatigue, because they're looking at things on a list like mom or bank or doctor. Well, mom, they probably had one. Bank, there probably is one. But
right.
why'd you write it down? Oh, her birthday's coming. Yeah, what are you going to do? I don't know what I'm going to do. That's right.
Yeah.
Most people, then, what passes for organization or list still has a lot of executive decision-making undone yet.
Mm, that's interesting.
What exactly it is. And that's stage two of what I describe in the five stages of how you manage workflow. Stage two is then determining, okay, what's the outcome about mom? You're going to give her a party or not? Mm-hmm. And what's the next action? You're going to call your sister and see, you know, what, in other words, you need to really unpack those to a next level. And most people haven't done that.
That's interesting. Well, if you're up for it, David, I actually have a to-do list. Could we just go through a couple of mine and maybe you could coach me on if this is what my actions need to be? So I've got a few things on here. I won't go into a long list. I have a tendency to keep long lists, but probably shows my backlog.
Push your eyes and point.
Okay.
Anyone will do.
All right. So here's item number one. Prioritize books to read. I have a long list of books that I have to read for my job. It's for future events and things like that. So that's what my item says. Prioritize books to read. Is that a next action?
Don't know. What would it look like? Where would you do that?
Well, first I would need to make said list of books because that is
and
for
where
sure
would
in
my pen or paper or on a computer.
I could make it on a computer. I would say I'd be gathering from multiple different places though.
Great. But you'd sit down at a computer
yes.
to start.
Yes.
You'd start to draft your list of books.
Yes.
Right. Hey, now that's the next action.
Okay.
If I can see where it is, I can see physically, visibly what you would be doing.
Okay.
But did you just notice that you still just had to make a decision?
Yes.
That was not clear yet.
Right.
That's why you stared at it and went, ah! You're avoiding it because some part of you says, but I don't know what to do. It didn't
right.
take you long to figure it out.
So, and it's interesting because when, even saying the statement, draft the list of books on my computer, that's not even what the task I had on my to-do list. I have to then prioritize them, but I can't even do that till I know what the list is.
Exactly.
Okay.
And by the way, what is all this about? This will all be done when what's true. What are you trying to do here? Are you trying to set up a process?
It's research. It's research for a work project in the fall. So I've got to gather all this information reading and research.
Great. And you don't have to say what the project is if you don't want, but what is the big project that's driving all that?
Events. We're going to create some events, and this is going to help me feel equipped to create content for the event.
Oh, great. Okay. And so creating all those events, is that one project, or is each one of those a separate one?
One project.
Okay.
One event, essentially, that I'm
gotcha.
Gearing up
okay.
for.
So if this were me, mm-hmm. by the way, I would go to a list of mine called projects.
Okay.
Remember in the book, that's a very, very powerful list.
Yes.
And it would say finalize event X, whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's can that be finished within a year?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay. Because if it was longer than a year, then that would be in more of the nature of a goal, not a project.
Mm.
But anything you can finish within 12 months, you better be putting on a project list because that's the driver of the weekly review. Once a week, you better be looking at that, Christy, and going, okay, wait a minute. Ooh, God, that reminds me, I need to.
Gotcha.
You need to be aware of the delta between that being finished and where you are on a regular basis. Not every hour, every day, but at least once a week.
Sure.
So now you've got a project and you've got a next action called draft the list of books. As long as you put reminders of those things,
mm-hmm.
now, That's you know, you did stage one and stage two. You captured the thing that's grabbing your head.
Sure.
And you made an action and an outcome decision about them.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, that's the zeros and ones of getting things done.
Mm-hmm.
You need to know what done means and what doing looks like and where it happens. So those two things, but now you need to make sure you park the results of that thinking in a trusted place.
Mm.
So if you don't trust that you, even if you write down finalize project X, but you don't trust the behavior that you will engage with that reminder as frequently as you think you should,
mm-hmm.
it'll crawl back up in your head again.
That's good. And I feel like you're speaking right to me. I am the worst of snooze reminders on my computer. Just snooze, all day long.
You're dead. You're like crying wolf. It's like nobody pays any attention to him anymore.
That's what my reminder system is saying behind my back. They're saying she ignores us. I don't know why we even remind her.
Right.
One of the that was helpful. Thank you. And I think that's probably good for a lot of our leaders because it's like you said, these natural behaviors is kind of the mode we operate in, and it doesn't come naturally. So you have to train yourself to do something different. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yeah. And by the way, just to get started, and it's a little daunting for most people, but that's why usually when we coach folks, our coaching is not like overtime accountability coaching. It's a 2-day intensive where we just sit down and say, okay, let's walk you through exactly what I just did with you.
Sure.
But it would take us 1 to 6 hours just to collect the raw data of all those things pulling on your attention, like that event and like those books. And it would take the rest of 2 days for us to go through exactly what you just did, have you make those decisions, and park that stuff in the appropriate place, because most people have a huge backlog.
Sure.
They have not applied these principles to. So I won't kid anybody. It will take a good weekend to sit down if you get my book or if you catch this just in what we've been talking
mm-hmm.
about, to sit down and install that. Now, once you're there, it doesn't take a lot to keep to you know, to keep it current.
Mm-hmm.
But you are going to have to, you know, invest a little bit of time and effort into your own process here.
One other thing that's interesting too, because the way that you described it, so many people have just a huge backlog. And I think one of the great things about your book is that you articulate that in such a relatable way that makes people realize, oh, that's me. That he's talking about me. Because it's very easy for people to continue operating day to day and think, oh, it's the business or it's that person that's nagging me. It's some external thing. That doesn't really apply to me. I don't have a backlog. But when you call it out the way that you do, it's like, oh, wow, it's kind of this aha moment of looking in the mirror going, yeah, he's talking about me. I have this backlog we're talking about here. And so that's good because realizing it is.
Too. I get it too. I'm a fellow student here.
Sure. Well, one of the things you talk about in the book is this idea of waiting fors. And I think that really resonated with me, honestly, because I'm the typical person that sends an email and then I just trust that in space it's going to be magically taken care of and I never have to think about it again. And that's not the case. So talk to us a little bit about your idea of waiting for.
Well, waiting for is just keeping track of people that you're expecting stuff from. You know, many times the next action is not yours. You're waiting on your boss to get back to you to okay something. You're waiting on a client to come back to say X, Y, and Z. You ordered something through the web and it hasn't shown up yet. And most people have quite a number of those.
Right.
And that's oftentimes where a lot of the stress for bosses, entrepreneurs, and managers and executives comes from, is because they have not kept track of all the deliverables they're asking of people, and then they follow up when it blows up, as opposed to a regular renegotiated reviewed event.
Mm.
See, do they need any help with this? Do I need to light a fire, kick butt, check status on any of this?
Mm.
And that's one of the things that's one of the most instantly stress relieving things to do is to get that list.
Mm.
Just call it waiting for. And
that's,
you know,
good.
They could be whole projects you've delegated. They could be simple, you know, little things you've ordered that haven't come yet. You know, any and all that.
Well, and that's so important for leaders too, because with as many things as they delegate, especially as they become more successful and have more things that they're accountable for, just having some kind of system for tracking that, so that, you know, not to micromanage, but so that you're on top of it and you're informed in what's going on in your business, as any business leader wants to know.
I don't trust anybody.
You've got your long waiting for a list. Make sure it's all covered.
Well, some things I don't care. You know, if it shows up or if it doesn't, then that's fine. I just offloaded it because I don't need it.
Sure.
They can do with it what they want. But if I do care, there is some, you know, outcome or deliverable on this, then absolutely, I track it.
Absolutely. And at the end of the book, you really summarize this whole method by turning it into key habits. And I think that's, you know, a place that a lot of small business leaders can really benefit. Talk to us a little bit about these ideas of key habits.
Key habits. Well, first of all, let me suggest a book. A friend of mine who's also a big champion of GTD, my Getting Things Done thing, wrote a great book last year called The Power of Habits, Charles Duhigg, Duhigg.
Okay.
First of all, if anybody's into sort of understanding the new science and neurology of habit building, both organizational habits as well as personal habits, that's a fabulous book.
Mm, okay, great.
But one of Charles's key elements, and to answer your question, is something he calls keystone habits. In other words, you might have 25 habits you'd like to change. Don't go try to change 25 habits. Ask yourself which one or two habits that if I change those, they'd be like the domino effect.
Mm.
You know, like exercise often is a big keystone for a lot of people. If I do that more regularly, I will then feel better, I'll be more confident, I'll have more energy, and that'll help a lot of the other habits I might be wanting to change as well. So in terms of my stuff, the keystone habits are A, keep stuff out of your head, write it down, and B, empty your in-basket every 24 to 48 hours. Those are really keystone habits. If you do those things, believe me, it will get you to make a lot of decisions you've been avoiding. If I said, hey, you know, Chrissy, would you please go make all the decisions you've been avoiding?
That sounds overwhelming.
But if I say, okay, put those each one of those on a piece of paper in your in-basket, now drive your in-basket to zero.
Mm.
And that's how I trick myself.
Yeah, just break it down into small little steps.
I would still avoid a whole lot of things like the plague, just because it requires thinking. It might not be perfect, and you know, all those reasons we procrastinate.
Sure.
You know, but because I have the habit of emptying out my in basket, I have to then sit down and go, "Come on, David, decide. What are you going to do about it?" Okay. But that's because I want to see that in basket zero.
Sure. And that seems so doable, you know, just those two things. If you just get them out of your head on paper, and if you then, like you said, drive your inbox, like those two things seem doable. It doesn't seem like this overwhelming process, but as you described it, that really is the first domino to create the domino effect that you're talking about here.
Exactly.
That's so great. Well, honestly, you know, David, I really appreciate this. This has been as helpful for me personally as I'm sure it has been for all of our listeners. We, you know, we're constantly trying to find ways to grow our business and our team, but also ourselves personally as leaders. And this is such a great resource and such a great tool. Tell us where we can get the book. Is it your website, davidco.com?
Yeah, you can get it there, and you know, all the great online bookstores, you know, they'll have it as well.
Gotcha. So. Awesome. And then on your website, I know you've got coaching offerings, you do consulting, you've got a lot of great resources and tools, and you guys can check that out at davidco.com. David, I appreciate you being with us so much. This has been helpful for all of our listeners, and it's definitely something that gets me excited about going back and cleaning out my inbox for sure.
Hey, yeah, go for it. It's fun. Yeah, this has been fun.
Well, I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, those are some great ideas from David Allen. I don't know about you guys, but just even the coaching me on one item on my to-do list and how many implications that had was extremely helpful. I'm definitely guilty of making a to-do list with a lot of random words and thoughts, but they don't have next steps. They don't have next actions as he talks about it. And I know many of you business leaders out there probably struggle with the lifestyle and the habit of just living your life putting out fires, as he describes it, having a backlog of emergencies all the time. And that's pretty common. We even see that with our business leaders here. And so this idea, this book and this process is really changing the way that productivity is done in the workplace, but it takes changing behaviors. And you know, we have someone here on our team that actually has been a huge fan of David Allen's, and she is the one that recommended us bring him on as our guest for our podcast today. So I wanted to invite her to come and hang out with me for a little bit to talk about his ideas, to talk about the book, and that's Cheryl Deneve. Cheryl is our Entree Leadership content producer, and so she coordinates all of the content that goes on EntreeLeadership.com, which if you guys check out that website, you know how often we are keeping that updated with great tools and resources and content. So Cheryl, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks. It was great to be part of it.
So we're talking about productivity this month, and we just dove into the high-level ideas of David's book. And I know that you were actually a fan even before we did this podcast, because you kind of experienced this for yourself firsthand.
Absolutely.
So tell me about that.
Well, I began my career here at Dave's company as an executive assistant. And so one of the things that I was tasked with from the very beginning was helping my leader get more done. Mm. And since I wasn't an expert at that, mm-hmm. I went out, did my research, and immediately found David's book.
Mm.
So the process worked really well for me. And after I was comfortable with it about 2 weeks, then I was ready to help my leader.
Mm-hmm.
So we spent about 2 days because his office was a disaster.
Oh, yeah.
Every drawer was full. Mm. When you opened doors of cabinets, things fell out. And there were stacks and stacks of papers and books and just ridiculous items under his desk. So we went through each separate item, mm-hmm. made a decision about what to do with it. And if there was a next action, then we put it on his to-do list in the way that David talked about, mm-hmm. and set him up for success, got all of that stuff cleaned out of his office and everything out of his head.
Mm.
So the next morning, he came to me and said, I just had the most productive 2-hour period of my entire career.
Wow. Just after those 2 days.
Yes. And the stress was gone of trying to remember all those things that were floating around in his head, because he had a system, it was all captured, and he knew he could trust it.
You know, Cheryl, as you're describing that office, I bet that represents so many offices of people listening. I bet they are listening to you describe that going, yep, that's me. Yep, those are my drawers. Yep, my closet would probably explode if someone opened it. So when you got in there and you dug into some of this stuff, what was all the stuff? What actually was it?
Well, that was the funny part, because a lot of it really was just excess stuff. There were loose papers that had random numbers written on them that didn't mean anything anymore. There were also a lot of items that didn't even belong to him, things that people had given him to look at or review, old paperwork. And so we literally had 6 or 8 stacks outside his office when we were done of items that belonged to other people.
Mm. And so then you have this office full of these things that are either just clutter and irrelevant or things that belong to other people. That really distracts you, right? From like the things you're actually trying to do.
Yes, and it's stressful, even if you don't realize it on a conscious level, because clutter is stressful.
Mm, that's good. Cheryl, this has been so much fun. Thanks so much for being with us today. I love talking to you and really appreciate you bringing this to our attention so we could benefit from David Allen's process and all of his insights.
It was a lot of fun.
Thanks so much. Now, for those of you in the San Antonio area, I wanted to let you know we're actually going to be there on March 5th next week, and we'd love to see you at our Entree Leadership one-day event. For everyone else, you can always connect with us on entreeleadership.com. Stay plugged into this Entree Leadership stuff. Keep learning and keep leading. Until next time, grow yourself, grow your team, grow your profits.